These are all foundational elements. If you're wanting to enter 2022 in a way that is conscious, that is values aligned, that is for the betterment of the planet, these are the three things we recommend.
Here we go, 2022. Hey, Bonnie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How's it going?
Here we are. It's been a wild ride so far. Rang in the new year with a little bit of COVID.
Ooh, Omicron.
Mom and Dad came to visit LA and ended up the whole family got it. And we just all had to quarantine for a little while, which was such a bummer because, you know, they're not always out here, especially during this lockdown time. They came out and we had to like be apart for a week. Plus, get this, it rained for 11 days straight in Los Angeles while they were here. At some points, it was actually warmer and sunnier in Ohio than it was here in LA.
Whew, it's like Bali weather.
I know. So I felt bad for that, but healed up, feeling better. And yeah, here comes 2022, a lot on the horizon for us.
Yeah.
How was your new year, Bon? Talk about your fantastic time.
It was good. I think a lot of people did get COVID. So at least you and we're celebrating similarly to, I'm sure, many other families, unfortunately. Yeah. My new year was pretty magical. A little life update for me. I did meet someone here in Bali. His name is Mark. He is wonderful. He works in solar energy, deeply cares about climate change, and we're kind of on this fight together, which feels really great. And the two of us actually took a little scuba dive cruise to North Sulawesi, which is an island north of Bali in Indonesia. Looks kind of like a monkey to me if you look at it. And we were on the tippy top tail. We flew to a city called Manado, from where we took a car to a port called Bitung, from which we took a boat into the little bay of that island, an island called Togian. We spent 13 days essentially cruising around that area. And every day there were three or four different dives, each about an hour long. Actually, there was one day I did three dives. Most days I only did two, but one day I did morning and afternoon, and then the night dive, which is when you dive after the sun goes down and everything is dark and different fish and critters come out below the sea, which is pretty magical. So
were
yeah,
you scared it was at all to be diving at night?
Yes, it's disorienting for so many reasons. I mean, you have flashlights so you can see people. Obviously, they have flashlights. You can see where their lights are. Yeah, it was a little bit scary, but mostly it was really magical. There was one little like tiny critter called a flatworm that we saw swimming in the sea. And when you shone your flashlight on it, you could just see this little thing flying through black sea with just white pieces of, you know, fish scales or whatever it is that floats around in the ocean. And it looked like a little creature flying through outer space and the stars around it. It was just really cool. But yeah, it's definitely disorienting swimming at night. You can't see the corals, like where they are. So you have to, I was feeling a little like self-conscious that I was going to kick something accidentally and, you know, constantly like looking around. And so it was a little bit stressful than when you dive during the day, but mostly it was really great and magical.
But well, yeah, I was on the other end of receiving all of your beautiful photos and videos whenever you got service, and it was funny to be with mom during that time because she would just always, you know, find something to be concerned about, like when she was worried about the whale shark, that was very cool.
That was that really cool, and I have something to say about that, but we can talk about it a little later. But yeah, whale sharks don't have teeth. They're very docile, very sweet animals. sort of like, you know, a manta, actually, in that they're just very graceful and they have their big filter feeder mouths that look like big smiles.
What do you want to say about it? I'm curious. We don't have to talk about it later.
Well, maybe this is a good transition point. So what we want to do going forward, Madeline and I, with these podcast episodes is, you know, we've spent the last, year and a half on this podcast, speaking to so many experts, doing a lot of reading, you know, getting super educated and in depth on this topic of climate change and conservation and environmental protection and what our individual roles are in it and what our collective roles are in it. And I think it's great. It's a great place for people to start to get informed and to learn about these different areas where they can save the planet, because there are so many different industries affected, means that there's so many ways in, which was our sort of goal, you know, to make people feel like this is accessible. Now that we have this background knowledge, we want to organize it and put it together in a way that's really tangible for you guys to start to say, okay, well, what can I really do in my life? And what are the small changes that I can make? We talk about making small changes. What are they specifically? We hope that this feels a little bit more like instructive, useful, and, you know, not just informative, but also, like I said, tangible, like tangible takeaways. Anyway, one of the things we can talk about today, and maybe we kick off with this, is about getting informed. The simple importance of getting educated on this topic, and it's something people shy away from. And I was going to talk about when we went to see the whale sharks. Togian Island actually is known as a place where whale sharks do gather, swim through. So we kind of knew there was this chance that we would see whale sharks. When it came to the day of the actual dive to see them, what it was a small village where they, as a way to make money, the fishermen go out into the sea, just not very far from shore, actually, and throw little fish into the water. And the whale sharks come, and it's almost like feeding a dog. And they just come up, swim up to the boat, and the fishermen feed, you know, throw the food directly into their mouths. And then when they stop for a minute, then the shark will swim to a different boat, like a dog going to a different table looking for scraps. And it was really beautiful, obviously, to be able to have this close encounter with this majestic, huge animal. But at the same time, after a while of watching this go on, I felt a little queasy, like a little sick about it. Like, I wasn't really informed in the habits of sharks, of whale sharks, and whether, you know, and their, you know, proclivity for this area, and whether this is something that's good for them or bad for them. So I actually went out to dinner with a friend of mine who works in marine conservation and is a diver. And I said, you know, this is how I felt, and what do you think? And she said, well, you know, first of all, was there a briefing given about respecting the whale shark before you went on this excursion? Like, did they talk to you about minding a certain distance and behavior when it comes to like taking pictures of the animal and all this stuff? Not really. The most that they said was to watch out for the tail, to give the tail a wide berth, because it can actually hurt you if you get hit because it's so large. But other than that, it was kind of a free-for-all. There was a lot of us divers crowding around this animal, not to mention the boats, which didn't feel good. The other thing she said was, well, if this happened too often and there were lots of these villages that were just feeding these whale sharks, what eventually is going to happen is it'll disrupt their mating habits, because they won't be swimming to the places where they usually gather as a species to find their mates and continue the process of evolution, process of reproduction. And that can be harmful to the species down the line. So there are these little considerations, and it was just simply a moment in time where I didn't feel smart enough on the topic to speak up, to say something. And not that, you know, and this will happen. Of course, there'll be moments where you're just like, well, I don't feel educated enough to counter this argument. But But for broader strokes topics in conservation and climate change, I think reading up and having a baseline will help you become more and more an ambassador for this important issue. And it will, like, I instinctively knew something was off. And I credit that to the work that I've done in reading about conservation and reading about climate change and reading about, you know, disruptive impacts of humans on animal populations. I didn't know exactly what the detriment was, where I didn't feel like I could speak up, but at least in my gut, something was telling me this was wrong. And I think that that is a result of having educated myself.
And I think that something important to note here is that you didn't speak up when you didn't know. And I think that that can be just as important as speaking up when you do know things. Because the truth is, like, you can flag it in your brain, like, I want to learn more about this because something feels off and I just don't know. But a lot of people claim to be experts, shout out information, and it sounds very convincing, and it just creates misinformation. So without knowing, that's such a skill that I just wanted to pull out of your story, is to admit when you actually don't know something and to just, like, withhold for a moment and kind of put a pin in the subject because you want to know. You've found a place where you're uneducated in a way. You're participating in something and you're like, is this okay? And so then you checked in on it. And I think that's such a beautiful example of humility, of what Diana calls the long hold. It wasn't that long. It was like a few weeks for you. But sometimes you have to hold something for a little bit of time to let yourself kind of come to new conclusions, to let yourself understand what it is, what the truth is, you know, and to find some credible sources.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that we talked about, is when you're educating yourself, how to find credible sources.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing, going back to what you said, is that I talked to my friend at dinner about, was when you don't know, don't be afraid to ask questions, because asking questions can be just as much a way to hold people accountable as correcting or, you know, saying this is wrong or something. When they gave this briefing, oh, you know, we're going to this place where they feed whale sharks, so we're definitely going to see one. If I had raised my hand and simply said, oh, you know, is this good for whale sharks? Is this, you know, what are the precautions that we should be aware of to make sure that we keep the animal safe or that we're respecting them? Having those types of questions ready, because I simply didn't know. Even if they didn't have the answers, it would be a way for them to say, we should probably know that in case that comes up again, you know, which might lead people down a path to creating more standards for precaution and et cetera. So yeah, it's humility on both sides of withholding when you don't know, because if misinformation is really a problem here, imagine if you tell someone something, especially about climate change, where there's already so much, like, so many people who are sort of nebulous on this and like, is it really that bad? If you tell someone something that, and then they find out later you're wrong, that might in their head justify, well, these people don't know what they're talking about. And then they're, you know, they're so much less inclined to believe the next person who comes along. So know when to hold your tongue as hard as it can be, but also don't be afraid to ask questions when you don't know, because that is a powerful form of accountability as well.
Yeah, I just want to say to that point that it's interesting, like, you know, why didn't you ask questions? And I know it's because you're a new diver and you probably felt very, like, new to the situation and maybe naive and didn't want to look stupid or whatever it might be that came up, or didn't even know to ask the question in the moment that they were giving the brief. Because you didn't, maybe, I don't know if you felt that visceral feeling until you went in the water. Did you? Yeah. Yeah. She's shaking her head. No.
No. Sorry, it was muted. Yeah. No, I didn't. It wasn't. Yeah. Of course, at first I was just overwhelmed with the beauty of seeing something so majestic up close. it wasn't until I was watching it for 10, 15 minutes, seeing everybody kind of bump into each other around it and swim and try to get close to it, that I was like, this feels off for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. And then to talk a little bit more about the self-education piece, going into like, so you found a marine conservation person to talk to get information from. We don't all have those kinds of experts at our disposal all the time. A lot of us turn to the Google expert. But how can we, and I know you're really good with this because you do a lot of like media management and sifting through, what are your tips for finding and sourcing good information and knowing that you're educating yourself with truth as best you can?
Yeah, I think that, right, because I do this for my job all the time. I sort through articles and I also try to get clients mentioned in the most credible sources possible. That the key question to always ask when it comes to media credibility is who is benefiting from the publicization of this information. You know, if you're just going back to this example with a tourism operator and they're telling you, no, this is good for the turtles, this is good for the whale sharks, this is good for the dolphins, they're benefiting from you coming to them to see the dolphins and turtles and whales. So of course they're going to say that it's good for them. You have to look at what the motivation is, and that all comes down to who's benefiting from the release of that information. The other thing too is in an article, you want both sides to be presented, at least to some degree. So, you know, a balanced article having the positives and the negatives kind of revealed. So then you can sort of form more of an independent opinion when you feel like you're being led down one direction and convinced. And trust me, I've done this where I've read an article, totally drunk the Kool-Aid of whatever is being told to me, and then someone presents a counter argument and suddenly has me thinking. It's just something to be aware of. And some information or some books that have been really helpful for me in the, again, bigger picture about climate change, The Future We Choose, which was written by Christiana Figueres. We've mentioned on the podcast before. Tom Rivett-Carnac is co-author. Christiana was one of the architects of the Paris Climate Agreements. They have, and Tom has a history of, I think, working in the fossil fuel industry. So, you know, they both have intimate knowledge of this topic from different sides of the coin and brought it together in a really balanced and informative way, of what the reality of climate change is currently, and also what individual actions can be taken to be a part of the change. Project Drawdown has a book, Drawdown, that we've also mentioned, that has been an incredible source of information for me. It's extensively researched to form a really comprehensive and actionable plan on all levels, corporate and individual and government, to address the climate crisis. So looking at who the authors are, looking at where money or proceeds from the sale of this information is going back to, looking when research sources are quoted, who is funding that research? So if it's something like the World Wildlife Fund that everybody is aware of, they have a long history and a lot of credibility of being champions for animal conservation. Okay, probably don't need to look into them. But if it's an association or nonprofit name comes up, I would encourage people to look at where funding is coming from, because sometimes there are these associations that are set up for the specific purpose of fronting efforts by larger corporations to spread misinformation. You know, there's oil companies that are infamous for setting up these front nonprofit sounding charitable organizations that have research that comes out. Follow the money, question who benefits, and and yeah, and look at the authors and what their background is.
I have to say, it kind of leads into another point that we have, which is something we've kind of adapted from our teacher, Diana, who had a presence on our podcast in the first season. She says, how you do anything is how you do everything. And she really helped me to kind of understand that the importance to all of the little actions in our life and how they add up. All the little breaths that we take that are conscious that add up to an aware, awakened life, or all the unconscious acts that we might have that, you know, have a different impact. And I think if you're a person who cares about the information you're reading, whether it be about politics or, you know, trying to find a new brand to buy a bathrobe or something like that, like, trust your instincts. Because I think, you know, when you are reading information, there's that feeling that you can get sometimes. So it's just like, is this true? And I would say err on the side of caution, especially with internet education. Coming back to that, how you do anything is how you do everything. Bonnie reminded me that another one of my teachers, Marnie Task, who trained me as a yoga teacher, drilled this in with me for physicality, like the movements that I actually do, because I worked with her actually to help her little company and to help, you know, feed her daughter at the same time when I was doing my yoga certification. And I would be in the fridge making lunch, kind of hunched over getting something from a shelf. And she'd be like, Maddie, what are you doing? You have to do chair pose when you're squatting down, or, you know, a functional squat. And she'd remind me like of my posture when I'm getting something from the fridge. And that really stuck with me. Like when I wash my hands, when I pick something up off of the floor, when I fill my water up, because the water is like lower than my hips a little bit in our house. So all of these little ways that we can keep our health of our body, the little ways we eat, the way we breathe, all of these little practices we can do that really help our posture, help our heart, all of that. It's similar for the health of the planet, right? All of the little things we buy, all of the conversations we have, questions we ask.
I think that this comes to mind for me a lot when I'm picking up trash in Bali, especially because there is plastic trash everywhere. The oceans are full of it. You know, me and Mark went on a kayak trip at one point off of the boat, and I loaded up my kayak with just plastic bottles and some masks and things that were floating in the water, even though I could see that there was plenty more out there. And, you know, it's easy in those moments to say, well, why bother? Who cares? You know, like, I can't clean up all of this, so why clean up any of it? But imagine, it, you know, if we all said that, then at least there's people out there who are cleaning up trash, and it matters. How you do anything is how you do everything. And so because I'm picking up trash, it means that I am conscious of the impact that humans are having, and I am addressing it in that moment, and it is manifesting in my physical action, and it's also in my spirit and my mind. It feels something I am a part of. And I will continue to do that. And I think it has ripple effects too. When people see other people doing that, it can inspire others. So it does matter. Little, small things matter even when they feel like they're so insignificant.
I have a story that I love, actually, that Diana told me that I want to tell kind of about this subject. Just, you know, imagining if that mask got tied around the neck of a turtle and now it won't because it's not there because you pulled it out of the ocean, you know, so that's like that's another reason you can kind of tangibly see that it would matter. But it's the story of a boy on the beach, and there was a storm the night before, and a bunch of starfish got washed up onto the beach.
You told this story.
And were drying out. Have I? Apparently I've told it before, but I'm going to tell it again. A bunch of starfish got washed up on the beach and were drying out. And there's a little boy there picking up a starfish at a time and throwing it into the ocean. And there's an old man, sort of sinister, walks by and is like, why are you doing that? It doesn't matter. You're never going to get all of these starfish. picks it up another one. He says, well, it matters to this one. And he throws it into the ocean. And that's the whole thing is like, yeah, we're never going to be able to change the whole world on our own back. But if everybody on the beach decided to do what that boy was doing that day, maybe all the starfish would get saved, you know? But if all of them say, I can't do all of this, then none of them will. So which side do you want to be on? The one that has hope that we'll all get together and we can all make a change? Or the one that's sort of cynical and saying, well, we're never going to get this done.
And so even saying that, like, have hope sometimes, I think, is hard. Sometimes it's like, well, if you lose hope or if you lose faith for a moment, then maybe you'll kind of be like, oh, well, it doesn't matter anyway. But when I feel that way, what I return to is at the end of my life, do I want to look back and think, I just let it all roll out how it was going to be? Or did I take action throughout my life to try to make the world a little bit better, even if I couldn't change everything? That's how I want to go out. I want to know that I, as the individual that I am, took whatever small steps were available to me every day to make a better world.
I love that. Exactly. And I think this kind of goes into one last thing that we'll talk about, which is this difference between having it be all about corporate responsibility versus having it be about individual responsibility. And sometimes I can get flack when I'm posting things about, say, my plastic-free journey, where people will be like, yes, that's great. Go you for trying. But really, this is a large corporation issue, and it can only be solved because if these large corporations change. And I just want to remind us that one of the big reasons that things have shifted, one of the big reasons why we have so many alternate milk options than dairy, is because customers wanted that. And there was a huge market, and people were like, we want to make money from all of these people who don't want to drink dairy anymore. And now, like, you can get an oat milk latte almost anywhere you go. Before, it was hard to get a non-dairy latte in so many places. So that's just a small example of a big shift that's happened in the market because of consumer demand. And we can still do that for plastic free, for to-go containers, for
renewable energy
systems, renewable energy.
Exactly. Yeah. Ashley Piper, on our episode about, you know, her book, Give a Shit, and, you know, how to live a more sustainable lifestyle, highly encourage it. You guys listen to it. She said, people forget we are corporations. They don't exist without a consumer base. We are an essential part of that entity, of that organism, if you will. So people say corporations. It's like, yes, but ultimately, I mean, yes, sometimes they have hearts and they make changes for ethical reasons. And that's wonderful that there are human hearts that do care at the top of these organizations, but more often than not, they are influenced by consumers. We are the essential driver of their actions. And so it is so important to remember how you do anything is how you do everything. And the cumulative result is change, has always been change. What has driven change? Our people's choices. So it matters. It's, you know, like, we could philosophize about all the ways it matters all day, but I think just that reminder that how you do anything is how you do everything is how we do everything is how the world does everything. It all adds up, hopefully, is something that sticks in your heart. And this can bring us to our final point of the three ways: get educated, remember that what your actions are every day have an impact and they matter. And the final one is the extreme importance of finding like-minded community, of finding values-aligned people who also are in this fight with you, whether that is you, Madeline, in my life, our conversations around this, my boyfriend, Mark, who also cares so deeply and shares information and hopes and dreams with me, with my friend who I got dinner with last night, who was able to, you know, talk to me about this whale shark incident. I mean, starting to surround yourself with people who you can have these conversations with, who can pull you up when you do start to feel like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Who aren't needing to look away, who aren't inconvenienced by this truth of what's happening.
Because it is inconvenient. It's an inconvenient way to live, unfortunately. It takes a little bit of effort. It takes that constant reminder of yourself, I matter, my choices matter, my actions matter. That to have to constantly justify that to the people around you can make it even harder. So you
because really, they might not want to be confronted with it.
Exactly. It's like when you're trying to change your diet, but you're surrounded by people who are still eating donuts every day. You know, it just makes it harder. So surrounding yourself, finding that group of people or that person that you can turn to, whoever it is, that is another really important step. I think these are all foundational elements. If you're wanting to enter 2022 in a way that is conscious, that is values aligned, that is for the betterment of the planet, these are the three things we recommend: community, education, and individual action.
Totally. I recommend watching Don't Look Up. It's on Netflix right now. It's just reminding me of that because they have this horrible news of a comet. It's basically like a comet is coming. And it's bad news, but they go on this TV show to give the news of this coming. And the TV show is like, yeah, well, we like to keep it light. And so they're like, don't take it very seriously. And they end up not really being able to capture the public attention because it's like everybody doesn't want to be inconvenienced by this idea that the world is going to end. And yeah, I guess it's a funny movie. I really highly recommend it. Did I just give too much of it away?
No, I think that the whole premise is that the world is ending, but it is a metaphor for climate change.
Exactly. Go watch Don't Look Up, and then also educate yourself and surround yourself with people who will remind you that what you're doing is important, and remind yourself that what you're doing is important. Those are our top three for this year, for 2022. If you wanted to start it off on a green foot.
And the world. We're happy to be your community. We're happy to be your reminder of what actions to take and why they matter. We're happy to be your source of education and information, at least your starting point. We're so, so grateful, again, as always, for each of you, for all of your hearts and minds, for being here, for listening. We love you so much. We're excited to enter this new year with you, walking side by side with you in this work, cheering you on. Please get in touch with us at 101WaysPod on Instagram via direct message. Send us any topics, questions, ideas, even just to say hi. We're happy to give you a shout out on a future episode.
Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, stay green, stay hopeful. Here we go, 2022.
Woo!